evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, as always, joined by my co-host, Roberto Rojas, as we welcome in Miss Gabby Amato from BN Sports to break down the defending European Cup champions, Portugal, on their 2018 quest for World Cup glory. Both of you, thank you for joining me tonight. Gabby, I'm going to jump in right away and start asking you some questions. First and foremost, and again, we've had you on the show a few times, so I certainly know why. But tell us about your background and why you're an expert in Portuguese football.
Well, I wouldn't consider myself an expert. I'm a fan, just like all of your listeners and anyone who's ever heard me talk about soccer. You know, I'm just a huge fan of the sport. Portugal does have a very special place in my heart. Both my parents are Portuguese. My entire family is Portuguese, everyone born in Portugal. I'm actually first generation born in the U.S., but I have dual nationality just because, you know, literally every single family member is, as I said, Portuguese. Grew up in New Jersey in a very vibrant Portuguese community, in a very Portuguese household. So it's actually, it's an interesting sentiment, and it's something that I talk with a lot of people who are dual nationality. You know, you grew up in the United States, but I've always felt, obviously a massive connection to Portugal. I've always felt really just Portuguese. I never lived in Portugal, but I did spend many summers there with all of my family, and my love for soccer obviously is directly connected to my Portuguese heritage. When you're born and you're of Portuguese descent, you're pretty much given a team at birth. Usually it's within the top three in the Liga Sagres, Portuguese League, Primeira Liga. You're either a Porto fan, a Benfica fan, or a Sporting fan. And I was handed the green jersey. So my family is, all Sporting, Clube de Portugal fans. And, you know, that's really where my story started. Growing up, you know, in a Portuguese household, soccer was a big thing. And you learn everything that your parents teach you about the game. And now I'm just continuing to learn and absorbing it all. So, yeah, I'm not an expert, but definitely a big fan like everyone else.
Well, first, I'd like to disagree with you about the expert part. Because you have dropped some names on this show of 16, 17, 8-year-olds, 18-year-olds that Rob and I, you know, even though we watch entirely too much soccer, you've dropped these names on us and we're like, okay, I've never heard of that name. And then like a month and a half or 2 months later, boom, person shows up on the scene. So, you definitely are an expert. Second of all, I, as a first generation Italian American born in the Northeast like you, I can relate to everything you said, from the growing up in the household to the being handed a team, mine's Juventus.
Very cool.
You know, you also have, a famous New Jersey native who kind of follows my path, but, you know, was way better at soccer than me and got to go play for the Italian national team. That's Giuseppe Rossi. So, in terms of the Northeast, it is the great melting pot. It always was, because this is where the immigrants always came in. And in the 40s, 50s and 60s and even into the 30s, many people, whether they migrated from Spain or from Portugal or from Ireland or from Italy, all migrated and had to come through New York. So, you know, and then dispersed from there. So you could see where these pockets of Italian heritage, pockets of Italian or Portuguese populations, they exist here in Hartford. We have one here in Hartford, Connecticut, and I know a bunch of people from them very, very well. Sad news for you, the Portuguese club in Hartford just a few weeks ago recently burnt down.
I had no idea. We also have a Portuguese club in my town, Long Branch, New Jersey, is where I grew up. And so I that's devastating to hear, because, I mean, all of my childhood memories, for those of you who don't know how something like that works, it's, like grandparents are members of this Portuguese club, it's called, and then it's just a community that continues to grow. So their kids join the club, and then their kids' kids joined the club, and I went to Portuguese school at my Portuguese club, learned Portuguese, 10 years of Portuguese school, where they taught us the language, they taught us the history. So that's devastating to hear. My, thoughts and prayers with them. But yeah, it's always interesting, and I always like talking to people who are dual citizens, because it's kind of a weird thing, and it happened well, it's happened multiple times in World Cup draws, but you know, we get drawn with the United States, and then your heart is kind of torn because we're obviously American. We were born in the United States, but you have this connection to Portuguese heritage, something that you've grown up around. And so it's kind of like, who do you cheer for? And my heart always does lean, you know, to Portugal. Shh, don't tell anyone, but, you know, it's always interesting to talk to dual citizens and to people who grew up with closely connected to their heritage. So I'm sure you understand how that feels.
Oh, yeah. So you bring up a good question and a good way for me to segue to Rob, because all three of us here are of dual heritage, where we're Italian-American, Portuguese-American, or Paraguayan-American. So, Rob, I'm going to ask you first, you know, Paraguay versus the United States. For me, Italy versus the United States. For Gabby, Portugal versus the United States. When that match happens, who do you root for and why?
You know, it's kind of funny how all of our stories just echo each other. Obviously, you know, I've come from Paraguay descent. Both my parents are from Paraguay. You know, I think a similar story to Gabby. All my family is from Paraguay. I go there all the time, as you guys all know, have been for quite some time. And, you know, I've always had that connection, I guess, for my love of soccer for such a long time that, you know, the influence, I think, of all three of us with dual citizenship and having that double nationality of a first generation, I would say American, you know, it makes those passion and it makes that like connection very hard to choose one, either the country that you've been born and raised all your entire life, you know, had all the culture brought up to you or from your family. I mean, I'll share a story. I mean, when I was doing the Copa America 2 years ago, I followed the Paraguayan team all over when they were playing Orlando and Los Angeles and in Philadelphia when ironically they played the United States. And, you know, to be honest with you, I personally would go for Paraguay just because I've always had that connection and I've seen them play before. I have always had that for quite some time, and it's just, you know, always been in my life for I guess 20 years, I would say.
That's so funny, because I actually similarly to how you followed Paraguay, I'm sure the U.S. before the 2014 World Cup, Portugal actually came to the U.S. to do their like training, but right before they came, so they were here for about, I think, 10 days it was, and I was I guess 2014, I was a sophomore in college, and I applied for media. I had a blog, and I applied for media credentials, not thinking that I would ever in a million years be accepted. But I said, you know, what's the worst they're going to tell me? No. And I expect them to say no. So I applied, and much to my dismay, they accepted my credential. So I was with the Portuguese national team their entire preparation. I was there at trainings. I went to the game that they played in preparation at MetLife Stadium. I was in press conferences before their training sessions. And I'll never forget, the first press conference I went to was Nani. Nani came out. And Nani is someone that I followed for many years. He came from Sporting. I followed Sporting, followed him to Manchester United. And I swear, I'll never forget it. I felt like literally a little girl in, like, Disney World. And Nani walks in, and I'm like, oh, my God, you have to keep your composure, Gabby. You know, the first time that you really see, like, a mega star. And it was just a moment I'll never forget. And I think a moment that everyone can relate to, you know, seeing someone that you watched play growing up and then seeing them right there. And that was really the moment that it hit me, and I was like, wow. Well, number one, I'm so proud to be Portuguese. And number two, I'm definitely in the right profession because I love my job. So, it was similarly to, you know, to your story. It's a weird thing to be a dual citizen, but it's an amazing thing too, because you get to be connected to two amazing countries, and just cross your fingers that they never cross paths in the World Cup, which I haven't had a lot of luck with.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, that's going to go into our next section, is the World Cup history of Portugal. They've made it 7 times. This will be their 8th World Cup. They're making it to their 5th consecutive one for the national team. You know, to go back, and I guess, into the history real quick, 1966, first ever World Cup, inspired by the great Eusebio, that led them to 3rd place. 86, group stage finish. 2002, the first time that they've made it into a World Cup with the golden generation of a team like Luis Figo, Rui Costa, and many others, you know, were big favorites in 2002 to win the whole thing. Ended up finishing out of the group stages in disappointing fashion. fast forward 4 years later, we see a little kid by the name of Cristiano Ronaldo jump into the scene for this Portuguese team and inspire them with a mix of the golden generation that they still had, finished fourth place, their best finish in 40 years in a World Cup. 2010 and 2014 also finished in the round six, in the round of 16, and also in the group stage where they underwhelmingly did poor, I would say, in the group of death. Now we fast forward to 2018. And Gabby, before I ask, I guess, more of a historical factor of this Portuguese team, I want to go back, I guess, to the sentiment of a Portuguese American like yourself. You know, obviously, I'm going to grow up in, for those that you know, I live in Bridgeport, Connecticut, obviously a big Portuguese community is there. And I've seen, you know, every 4 years when a World Cup happened, you know, the Portuguese Americans there are very passionate. You know, it's something that I've never seen a different country do. Maybe Brazil, you know, with the amount of Brazilians that they have there. But for Portugal, it's like every 4 years, it's like a party over there. So, I mean, just for you and obviously for the family that you have in Portugal and those who have inspired and watch the World Cup every 4 years. What's it like, you know, looking at it from a distance, knowing that your team is in a World Cup?
I mean, I think for Portuguese people, it's an interesting thing, and it actually connects back way, way, way back into history. I think that because Portugal is such a tiny country, we kind of feel the need to prove to the rest of the world that, yeah, we're a tiny country, but we're capable of all these amazing things, and we have all these amazing amenities, and we have all these amazing players. And because such a small country that we are have produced so many unbelievable players, that hits a special place in our heart. And I think we see, a tournament like the World Cup as our stage to prove to the world that, yes, we might be a tiny country, and yes, we're always underestimated, but, you know, we can do it too. And I think it goes for World Cups and for Euros. I mean, obviously, we're coming off of our first, tournament win, which was an unbelievable accomplishment for us. I mean, after we won the Euro, and I've said this on the show before, you know, my dad cried, my grandfather was in Portugal crying. There were grown men crying because they never thought that they would see their little Portugal do that. You know, it was like we always knew that we were capable of accomplishing something great like that. But deep down, do you really think that you're ever going to do it? Because we've come so close and not been able to do it. It's an unbelievable feeling, and I think every time the World Cup comes around, it's another opportunity for us to prove that we can compete at this highest level, that our players are the best in the world, and that, you know, we can do it. And I think it's actually interesting, too, that sometimes I feel like the people who leave Portugal, I mean, Portuguese people in Portugal, the country stops when a World Cup is on, when a Euro is on. I mean, literally stops. No one is working. Offices are closed. Like cafes are all glued to the TV. The country is literally at a standstill. And I think it happens to the Portuguese who also leave the country. I've skipped school. I've missed finals for games that we've had. My mother's missed work. My father's missed work. My dad works in construction with a lot of Portuguese people. There's no work on days, on afternoons that Portugal plays. You know, people's schedules all revolve around the game, because for a month, it's our time to support a team that we believe can make it. And it's really an unbelievable thing to witness, and you've witnessed it. And I hope one day that everyone can witness it. The streets of Portugal are absolutely just lit alight when Portugal plays, and it's just unbelievable. It really is. And you've mentioned some of our World Cups in the past. 2006, obviously, I remember it very clearly. I was devastated when we lost to France in the semifinal. My father couldn't even watch the third place game because he was just, it just made him sick to even rewatch it. You know, 2002, we thought that we had the team to do it. It's very underwhelming. Like you said. Then 2004 came so close to winning the Euro. And I think everything that we do now all goes back to that 2004 year where we came so close to doing it, and it was taken right from under us by Greece. And ever since then, I think there's been this hunger to win. And obviously we've satisfied the hunger a little bit with our Euro win, but nothing's going to top a World Cup win. And I think after doing what we did in the Euro Portuguese, people believe now more than ever that we can do it. And I think with this team, we can do it.
No, absolutely. And I think our story's parallel. I mean, obviously, when Paraguay made the quarterfinals of the 2010 World Cup, you know, it was a standstill. I missed school, you know, I probably had to make up a few days, you know, just to watch Paraguay, you know, play those games. And I was devastated when we lost to Spain in the quarterfinals. And, you know, it has that feeling that I think for all three of us, Joe, myself, and you, being obviously of descendants of immigrants, you know, and having that passion of another country, it's something that maybe isn't understandable here in the United States for those that maybe don't understand how soccer works or know the passion that we all have. It's just something that, you know, although we are from different countries, I think the passion and the way we view things like a World Cup or a Euro or a major tournament where something's on the line, it's something that you can't explain how big it is for someone to declare yourself the best of a continent or even the best in the world. So,
right.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, go ahead.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. That's what makes the World Cup so beautiful, is that we all feel the same way about our respective country. So imagine what I feel for Portugal and what all Portuguese people feel for Portugal is happening in every country that is qualified for the tournament. So for a month, it really is beautiful. And it sounds so cheesy to explain it like that, but it's the best tournament in the world. And I cannot wait for it to begin.
Well, I'm going to jump in here now because we got to talk about how they actually got there. You know, the 2018 World Cup qualifying, they were in, I would say, Gabby, probably a weaker group. They were in, and I don't remember the actual group. I'm sorry, I think it was Group B, if I remember correctly. Of the European qualifying, they were grouped with Portugal, Switzerland, Hungary, Faroe Islands, Latvia, and Andorra. On that list, there are really only three teams that you would consider possibilities to make the World Cup, and that would be the top three, Portugal, Switzerland, and Hungary. The Portuguese team, as opposed to 4 years ago, if we rewind 4 years back, they made the 2014 World Cup, but they made it through the play-in round by beating Sweden. If you remember, it was the big thing between Zlatan and Cristiano Ronaldo, and we were going to have a World Cup without one of them, and it was Zlatan who ended up losing out in the end. But here, we go to the final day of qualifying, Portugal needing 3 points to win the group. Okay, Switzerland was undefeated at that point, and it was a 2-0 victory in the end that moved the Portuguese through on goal differential. A 12-goal differential better than Switzerland to move through. My question to you, Gabby, is with a group that was so weak behind Switzerland, how tested is this Portuguese side that we're going to take to the 2018 World Cup?
Well, I think any Portuguese person who has been following soccer, since pretty much the beginning, will tell you that Portugal has never made qualifying easy ever. I genuinely cannot remember the last time that Portugal qualified for anything with flying colors. We've always, for whatever reason, done poorly against teams that we really should just be completely demolishing. And when push comes to shove, then we turn it on. And it is exactly what happened in this qualifying. You know, we won the last game when we needed to win. We lost the opening match to Switzerland in all of qualifying, which set a terrible tone. But that's exactly what happened at the Euro. We lose the opening match. It's exactly what it's a repetitive thing. It's any Portuguese person will tell you, oh, here we go again. It's almost like we don't even anticipate anything. It will always come down to the final day, and it just will. And I would be shocked if in this World Cup, once it kicks off in June, if we don't make it, if we don't have it be until the last day, if you get what I'm saying. It's just this is how Portuguese people are used to having it done, and it's just not. I don't know why, but it's just something that continuously happens. And I think we've proven what we can do with our performance in the Euros. Our team will not be, I don't think it'll deviate much from the team that we did bring to the Euros, aside from a couple new additions and obviously some people being dropped on that squad, which we'll get to later. But I think we've proven what we can do. I think qualification, for whatever reason, Portugal didn't turn it on. We do turn it on when we need to turn it on. So I wouldn't take our qualification route as a an indicator of what we're going to do in the World Cup. No, I wouldn't.
Right.
So I'm not too worried about it.
Well, let me follow up here, and I'm going to follow up with Rob first on this question. I did a little math work on this Group B in the qualifying. Cristiano Ronaldo led all scorers in qualifying in this group with 15 goals over the 10 matches played. It actually accounted for 18% of the goals scored in the entire group. Never mind the goals. It actually, just doing a quick math, he scored over half of Portugal's goals. And Andre Silva wasn't that far behind. He had scored 9 goals. He was second in scoring in the group as well. So, Rob, you know, over to you. I want to ask you the question. We've seen Portugal do it in the final of the Euros a couple of years ago, where Cristiano comes out injured, but they still managed to win the match. You know, we had a great performance from Quaresma in that one. Nani was definitely very, very good. Is this team capable of getting goals elsewhere aside from Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think so. I don't want to really go into demonstrating, you know, as Gabby said, I don't think comparing the qualifiers and having that indication of how well they'll do in the World Cup would end up. I think it's unfair because they're two different situations that the teams are viewing. To qualify is one thing, and to do well and go and perform in a World Cup is another. But, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, many people want to point to I guess the stereotype of Portugal being Ronaldo plus 10, and that's completely untrue. I mean, you look at players performing all around the world, big clubs doing well. I mean, you know, we see a player, and Gabby, obviously, you know, a player that we follow, and you follow at BeIN Sports. It's Gonzalo Guedes. He's playing phenomenal at Valencia, and he's only 21 years old. And that's just the sign of how a team, I guess, without Cristiano Ronaldo can perform, you know, with players like Andre Silva at Milan or Gelson Machin at Sporting, Bernardo Silva, João Mário. You know, they're a team with a lot of attacking depth that I think it is a team like this, like Portugal, do have enough depth to score other goals rather than be it Cristiano Ronaldo. I think that's what makes the team so special, that the depth that they have in all accounts, be it defense, midfield, obviously, and attacker that we're mentioning, can prove and I guess squash those haters to view that this Portuguese team is more than just Ronaldo plus 10. I think it's an entire team that needs to perform well, and I feel that's how you're going to win the World Cup. You can't win a World Cup with one person, and you know, if you have great players on wonderful form, that's only going to make matters better for this national team. So I'll just stick into real quick and look at the nitty gritty. Obviously, for Portugal, it's the group. They were grouped, and I would say probably the most interesting group Portugal has had in quite some time. They were drawn in with Morocco, Iran, and a little rival that they've been accustomed to for quite some time. Their Iberian neighbor, Spain. They're going to open up on the 15th against Spain and in Sochi. Then they finish it. Then they play Morocco on the 20th, and then they play Iran on the 25th. Now, Gabby, obviously, I'll jump to you real quick. You know, Portugal, familiar foe of Spain, big rivals. We've seen them play each other in big competitions in 2010, 2012 Euros. And now, you know, I mean, simply put, I mean, do we feel that, you know, is third time's the charm for Portugal? Do you feel that they can really get a victory here and obviously view themselves as group winners? Or do you feel that, you know, you don't believe it would be Portugal-Spain? You feel that other games like Morocco and Iran will be much, much harder. What is your take on, I guess, this group and the Portuguese perspective of it?
Well, to be honest, it does worry me that they are the opening match of our group stage. As I've told you before, for whatever reason, it takes us a couple matches to turn the switch on. And so it does worry me a bit that we face Spain right away. But maybe that's exactly what we need. You know, maybe because it will obviously be the most difficult match in that group, on paper at least. You know, maybe that is it's now or never. You know, you have to. I mean, I would like to think that we can walk away with at least a point in that matchup. I think we could. I think we have the talent to do that. Will Fernando Santos' game plan be ready in time? Will they need a match or two to kind of figure out how they're going to play, how they're going to line up? I don't know. I can't answer that. It does worry me though that it's the opening game of the group stage. I won't lie. Do I think that Portugal can finish top of the group? I think that they can. Do I think that they will? No. I think it'll be Spain, Portugal, in that order, 1-2, which I think is just the realistic, you know, expectation. I think Spain are one of, if not the best team in the world right now. I absolutely love watching Spain play. Portugal, you know, I don't know what Fernando Santos's plan is. I think that, is he going to use the same tactics that he did in our Euro win? Is that going to work? Have people already figured it out? I don't know. I think it'll be really interesting to see who he calls up, and based on who he calls up, I think we'll get a feel for what exactly he's planning. But I don't know. We've had Iran in our group before. I believe it was in the 2006 World Cup. We had Iran in our group, and I, you know, we finished top of that group, if I'm not mistaken. So historically, we've done okay against Iran. But, you know, it's always those teams that you think, oh, yeah, these are going to be easy. We're going to be fine. And then your ego gets in the way. Your confidence is a little bit too high, and then you fall to them. So, you know, I think Portugal will finish second coming out of the group, to be realistic. That's my expectation. Do I think we could potentially finish first? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen? No. So that would be my little prediction.
Yeah, Joe, no, go ahead, finish.
Okay.
I'll jump to you as well, Joe. I mean, obviously, you know, I think many people want to point this as a neutral, straightforward group with Portugal, Spain finishing top. The question will be who will finish. And obviously, I think that first game is going to decide everything. So, Joe, I'll ask the same question that I've asked Gabby. You know, you think that this is going to be straightforward as it is, or do you feel that, you know, with the beauty that is the World Cup, maybe one of those teams, maybe Morocco and Iran, could shock someone?
No, I think it ultimately is a straightforward group, like Gabby said. I do feel that that is a tough draw, to draw Spain in the very first game, because you do want to start these tournaments out on the good foot, you know, as best you can.
Right.
And I think it makes it a little, obviously not a little tough, it's very tough to start out on the good foot against Spain. But it is also an opportunity, if you think about it, where the Portuguese side can say, you know what, listen, we're the defending European champions. You know, we're the ones holding the trophy. You don't hold that anymore. It's ours. So you've got to, you know, you've got to beat us. And I think you can come in with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and, you know, and play that way. You start to worry about how the result goes against Spain, or how the match goes, regardless of the result, win, lose, or draw. Because that Morocco side we've seen is very, very tough. They've got an incredible, you know, defense, you know, headed by Manny Benatia, who is on fire right now at Juventus. So it makes that second match on the tricky side. You know, if they do pull a point from Spain, I think that match is a little bit more manageable, because I think in the end, I think Portugal beats Iran handily. But I think that getting a point from Spain is not imperative, but it is a necessity in terms of it makes that second match much, much easier. But once we're through those two matches, I think you'll have a very clear window as to where Portugal is going to be, whether they're going to finish first or second. And I think, you know, ideally they would like to finish first, because finishing second means you're probably going to get Uruguay in Group A. But I think in the end, you know, finishing second is not going to be a terrible thing. I think that, you know, either of these two teams, Spain or Portugal, are capable of beating that Uruguayan side, even though it is an excellent team and two of the best strikers in the world right now. So it will be a tricky situation, but I do think they pass along, you know, first and second. So, you know, looking at the group and the players at hand, you know, obviously everybody wants to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, but, you know, there's so much on him. Let's talk about somebody else. Gabby, I'm going to go to you, and I want to talk about André Silva. Okay. Obviously, making the move from Porto to AC Milan, many saw it as a fantastic move. The project that they were building at AC Milan, the players that they were bringing in, Frank Kessie, you know, Leo Bonucci. They've got a young Donnarumma coming up. Romagnoli's a fantastic, you know, defender as well. This is a team built for the future as much as the present. And he really hasn't gotten much of a crack at AC Milan, sadly, because I think he's a wonderful talent. You know, so let's look at André Silva. Is he going to be more inclined to be starting on this Portuguese side moving forward, especially seeing that he's not getting the playing time at AC Milan that he should be getting?
I think he will. He's definitely going to be in Fernando Santos's plans as a starter. You know, it's unfortunate that he's not getting the playing time that he should be getting, you know, especially in a World Cup year. Just like you said, I was excited about his move to AC Milan. I thought it was a positive one. I liked the project that he was going to. And, you know, let's just call a spade, AC Milan are not what they were supposed to be, not what they should be after the money that they spent this summer. I do think it's really unfortunate for Andres Silva, the situation that he's in, because I do think that he's a sensational talent. The way he played at Porto is incredible. The way he plays for the Portuguese national team is unbelievable. But I do think he's still going to be a starter. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo is a huge fan of his. He's said it multiple times in Portuguese press that he feels fine with leaving the Portuguese national team one day because Andres Silva will be there to take it over. You know, I feel like their relationship up front is one that Fernando Santos is not going to have an option. Andres Silva will start. He will for sure be called up, for sure start. And to be realistic, the Portuguese national team doesn't have a whole lot of striker options. So Andres Silva is definitely going to be a man to watch. I think he's going to be superb. I think he's going to do phenomenally. He was phenomenal during the qualifying stages, and I think he will be again in the summer. I think, you know, his situation at AC Milan is not reflective of his potential and what he is going to do. I have no doubt in my mind that he is going to be a star to watch this summer, and I'm very excited for it because I think I just hope that his situation now is not hindering his confidence or you know, mentally having an effect on him because the skill he has it, and he was confident leaving Porto and entering AC Milan. I hope that, you know, nothing's going on there, but I think he will still be a starter and he will definitely be called up. So he will be one to watch without a doubt.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. Let me ask you a question that I know we've asked you this question plenty of times in plenty of different situations on this show, and it just comes up again because I think it's a great question, especially for you, and you always have the magic answer. You've given us in the past, you've given us Renato Sanchez, who, after we spoke, moved on to Bayern Munich. You gave us Gelson Martinez, who's a wonderful young talent. So now I'm going to ask you again, looking at this particular team moving forward, give us the name of a player that we should be watching out for, maybe a player that we might know, he's on the fringe, but somebody you think is either going to make a name for themselves at this tournament or somebody that's going to break out on this tournament and be one of those players that after a World Cup ends up picking up a nice contract at a big club.
Well, I think Roberto Raub actually mentioned one of them, my go-to guy at the moment, and he didn't come from Sporting, so, you know, that means a lot if I'm mentioning him. But Gonçalo Guedes, for me, is the Portuguese player in football right now. Even above Ronaldo, above Andres Silva, he is the star to watch. I don't know if obviously you guys watch La Liga very closely, and I hope your listeners do too. He is just an absolute sensation. He's one of the most selfless players I've ever seen, and for him being so young and smashing onto the scene so in such a massive way in La Liga this season with Valencia, you know, you would think it would get to his head a little bit. You would think he would not be so humble, not be so selfless, but he is just an absolute class act. He's been the key to Valencia's success this season. They just lost at the weekend, but during the month that he was out with a broken toe, I believe it was the month of December, that's when Valencia picked up their first loss, and I think they had back-to-back losses, just to show you how big of an impact he's making on this team. You know, obviously he made the move from Benfica to PSG, wasn't given a whole lot of playing time at PSG just because their midfield is incredibly stacked. I think his loan move to Valencia was the best possible move that he could make. I can't say enough about him. He's will without a doubt be called by Fernando Santos. He's already said that he's been keeping an eye on him. Gonçalo Guedes obviously said that's a dream of his. I would be shocked if he's not called up to the national team, and I think it would be a huge mistake by the Portuguese national team coach if he's not called up. I think he's already worth so much, and I think after this World Cup, he's gonna be the it thing. I can't say enough about him. If you haven't seen him play, please go watch him. He scores absolute stunners. His vision of the game is unbelievable. He's always a step ahead. It's incredible. And I know Rob, you're a fan of his as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been sensational, I think, for Valencia this season. And I think a player like him, given his age, you know, 21 years old, I think If he does have a successful tournament, be it score a lot of goals or really perform well, that, you know, I think PSG either would, A, consider him in the long term to really use him in what is already a stacked midfield, I would say, or B, you know, unfortunately, maybe if PSG will probably regret this in the future, you know, sell him off to a bigger club or a, I guess a club that where he can really establish himself as a top star in any league in the world and really perform as that top Portuguese player that we've already been accustomed to with him so far. So, Joe, I'll go back to you, of course.
Yeah, you know, I do have one more question about the players in this particular tournament. The back line in Portugal has always been manned by a couple of very, very tough players in José Font and Pepe, both players 34 years of age at this point and certainly in the twilight of their careers. So, Rob, I'm going to go to you first. Do either of these players make the team? Do we possibly see them moving over to a new guard? Because they do have a nice little crop of young talent that could come in and fill in as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. I think Portugal has always been known, I guess, for bringing in a mix of the old guard and the new guard. I mean, you mentioned José Font with West Ham. You mentioned a player maybe like Bruno Alves as well, 36 years old. Pepe, those defenders that we've been accustomed to so far, really being, I guess, that main star for those main stars for Portugal on the back. But then you're looking at players coming up, you know, Nelson Semedo, a player that we see time and time again for Barcelona this season. You know, we see a player like Joel Cantaleo, who's playing in Inter, and many others coming up that, you know, I think in terms of experience and what Portugal has always been doing for quite some time, and Gabby, obviously, I think you could probably answer this a little bit more better, but I think we're going to have to be more used to seeing these players that we've been seeing, like Pepe and José Fonch, Bruno Alves, and many others. So, I mean, I think that's the way it's going to happen, but I wouldn't also be surprised if Fernando Santos is calling up and using these younger players that we already are accustomed of seeing in the various leagues.
I agree with you guys. I think it's actually, I just read a Portuguese article back in December about the center back situation. It was you know, exactly how you said that the center back pairing for Portugal is, they're, you know, they're getting old. Do I think they're going to be called up? You know, your Pepe, your José Font, Bruno Alves. Yes, I do. I think this will probably be the last World Cup that they participate in, but I think they will be called up. I think you can see the youth. And that we will see the youth in your right and left back position. You know, you mentioned Juan Nelson Semedo has been great with Barcelona. João Cancelo may be an option, although Fernando Santos does tend to stick with a little bit of you know, more veterans in the back. You know, we saw Rafael Guerreiro in the Euro. Cedric is always his go-to choice too. So I don't think there's going to be too many surprises in the Portuguese back line. I think he'll really keep it classic and stick to the basics and stick to the veterans, which I agree with, because I mean, there's no one really like Pepe back there. Like, I just love the guy. But I think our surprises and the newcomers are definitely going to be in that midfield position. You know, how much playing time will Gelson Martins get? How much playing time will Gonçalo Guedes get? Will João Mário even be called because of his playing time situation? You know, it's Fábio Coentrão is back playing consistently with Sporting. Will he be called? I mean, there's so... Fernando Santos has the best problem on his hands, and that's the pool is so unbelievably big. There's so much Portuguese talent. He can only choose 23, and which 23 is it going to be? And I think, just like I said at the beginning of this, based on the 23 that he does bring, I think we'll be able to see what kind of you know, game plan he wants to move forward with. But I really do hope, and just like you said, he likes to stick, you know, mix the veterans with the new kids. But I hope we do see a nice little group of the new kids coming up, because I think they just have, it's an incredible pool of talent. And I think they should be given the opportunity to, you know, to show it off. Bernardo Silva, someone who didn't go to the Euro, but he will, I mean, I don't know. Will he be called up? Is his playing time enough at Man City, coming off the bench every once in a while? You know, the pool is so unbelievably big that I'm really interested to see how he narrows it down. But it's a great problem to have, and I think it just shows the depth of the Portuguese talent kind of wave making its way through European football right now.
No, absolutely. It's an incredible I guess, situation or embarrassment of riches, I would say, to have that depth and having to only pick 23 names is just going to be hard enough for for a coach like Fernando Santos. But obviously, we go to our next segment. It's going to be predictions. I do have two questions for both of you guys. Firstly, I want to ask Gabby this one. You know, we spend a couple of time on the players and, you know, players to watch or players that, you know, could or could not make this World Cup. But I'll ask you this first, Gabby. You know, who's a player that, you know, obviously you can only pick 23 names to a World Cup. You know, who do you think is a player that we've been accustomed to so far, maybe we were watching in Europe or for the Portuguese national team, that you wouldn't be surprised making this team, maybe just because of bad form or not really having consistent performances, well, good performances for the national team? I mean, who do you think is a player that, you know, with this incredible depth that Portugal has, would not make the list to Russia?
Well, one that I would be really upset if he didn't make it, but I would understand just due to the playing situation, is Adrian Silva a Sporting player who moved to Leicester City, but there was that whole hiccup with the Leicester City move, so he wasn't playing for a little bit. He's just a rock in midfield. He was one of the best players in our Euro win, and I would be upset if he didn't get the call up. But I think it would be linked directly to the playing time and just the options in midfield. But I think ultimately he will. He actually just had an interview where he said that, you know, he kind of got a boost of confidence from Fernando Santos. So I think he will still get the call up. I mean, there's just someone like Eliseu doesn't really do anything for me. I'd rather see someone a little bit more exciting. I wouldn't be upset if he didn't get the call up. You know, there's just the list just goes on and on. It just depends, like I said, on what Fernando Santos has planned here. And I think I would sacrifice anyone on that roster to bring in someone like Gonçalo Guedes, for example. So I wouldn't honestly be too upset with whoever we're sacrificing, because we all know that the person who's coming in is an absolute star. You know, our hero at the Euro, Eden, will he get the call up? You know, he is forever going to be engraved directly linked to our Euro win. He's the star. He's the most incredible story. Will he get the call up? I think it will be devastating if he doesn't. But would I understand it? Yes, because the pool is just so big. There's just not enough spots. So I think actually Edet is probably an interesting one. Will he get the call up based on what he did in the past? You know, does he deserve to get the call versus someone else who is playing consistently and who's maybe a little bit better? I don't know. It's actually an interesting. I would love to pool Portuguese people. I'm actually going to ask around. And that's an interesting question, because I wonder what people would say. You know, does he deserve the call up because of what he did? He's the star, or no? Has, you know, that ship sailed and we'll leave him connected with the Euro win forever? But the time's up. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we have a little story that we did on our first show when we did Germany. We asked your former colleague, Jack Grimsey, the same question where, you know, with the amount of debt that Germany has, you know, that he wouldn't be surprised if we see a player like Mario Götze or André Schürrle, who both contributed to the World Cup winning goal 4 years ago in Brazil against Argentina. You know, he said that he wouldn't be surprised if he does miss out on that team for Russia, just because of the form that he's been having, and I guess maybe the injuries as well. And so that's quite interesting to see that Portugal also has that situation as well. And Joe, I'll ask you this as well. I mean, you know, for all the depth and wonderful players that Portugal has, I mean, who's a player that you think, you know, I think it's going to be a win-win anyway for whatever player does or doesn't make it. But who do you think is a player that, you know, unfortunately does have to be sacrificed and feel that won't be on this team?
For me, you know, it's one name, and I would be surprised if he wasn't taken, and I would be surprised if he was taken. Or I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be shocked either way, and it's Renato Sanches. You know, 2 years ago when he busted onto the team, was an incredible, incredible talent, skilled. Like I said, it earned him the call to Bayern. But then he fell out of rotation with Carlo Ancelotti at the time, to the point where he wasn't seeing the pitch at all. Then he gets loaned out to Swansea City, and it's been a little bit of a mixed bag there. So do you bring him because he is so incredibly talented? Yeah. But do you not bring him because he's not developing to the player you thought he was going to? Yeah. So, I mean, he's a tough, tough spot. And again, when you talk about, you know, a lot of these players that are in the midfield, you've got André Gomes, you've got, you know, Bernardo Silva, even João Mario. I think João Mario does go to this tournament regardless of what's going on at Inter. I think he's too talented to leave at home. But I think Renato Sanches, I think, is one of those ones that's like, you know, if he's there, you'd be happy for him, and you wouldn't be surprised that he made the team. But if he wasn't there, you'd be sad for him, but you wouldn't be surprised he didn't make the team.
Great shout. Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have put it better myself. It's actually, every time we talk about Renato Sanches, I saw him as an unbelievable talent. He still is. I told you guys about him. He was great. And his Euro performance was great. And it's just sad. Maybe it was a little bit too much too fast. It was, you know, he wasn't given maybe the right opportunities, or he cracked under pressure, but it's exactly what you said. You know, it would be great to have him, and I don't think anyone would be surprised seeing him on the roster, but then no one would be surprised if he wasn't on the roster. So it's where, what I said at the beginning of our talk, based on, you know, the 23 players he picks, I think we'll be able to see in what direction he's going, and the pool is just so, so big that I don't want to have Fernando Santos' problem right now. Let's just leave it at that.
Now, of course, we would be remiss to not talk about the main man, and obviously a player that all three of us have been blessed to watch for, I would say, a good half of more than 10 years, maybe 15 years at the top level. And it's Cristiano Ronaldo, Mr. CR7. I mean, he's won everything. He's won 5 Ballon d'Ors, Golden Shoes, Champions Leagues. He's scored over 600 goals for his clubs and country. He has a knighthood, for goodness sake. That just shows how important he is to Portugal. But, of course, you know, I think the big thing that, you know, would probably cement himself as one of the greatest of all time. Yeah, an airport, of course. How can you forget an airport in my data? I think that's the biggest accomplishment of anything that Ronaldo has won. It's
an
airport.
Statue that looks nothing like him.
There you go. Exactly. That's just the most important accomplishment in Ronaldo's life. But of course, you know, there's one thing that he's missing that would probably cement himself as the greatest of all time. There's going to be debates like this between many people of different ages and different generations. But, you know, I think in this current stage of what we're watching, be it a soccer fan, you know, he's always had that big rivalry with Messi of doing everything at club but not at country. You know, that was broken 2 years ago when he won the European Championship, something Messi hasn't been able to do when he lost 3 straight finals. So here he is. The main storyline is the World Cup. Obviously, he'll be playing his 4th World Cup for Portugal, the captain for the national team. We could say it could be his last World Cup. We don't know. You know, at 32 years old, well, he's going to be 33 by that time. But, you know, many things are on the line. That's the biggest storyline, I would say, for this Portuguese national team. And Gabby, I'll ask you this first. Being the fan that you've been of Portugal, and obviously knowing Cristiano since his days at Sporting, at Manchester United, or even at Real Madrid now, when he played for Portugal since 2003, you know, winning a World Cup would mean everything for a player like him. But I think, how would this be viewed, firstly, by you, and where you would put him as the great, would this World Cup put him as the greatest of all time, better than Pele, Maradona, Messi, everything like that? And what do you think will be the perception of a man or a person like Cristiano Ronaldo to win that maiden World Cup for Portugal? What would be the reaction, I guess, and the way that people would view him in Portugal if they haven't already?
I think I've said this before, you know, on the show, Portuguese people, obviously we absolutely love Ronaldo. He's our pride and joy. I think when push comes to shove, we'll always defend him. But Portuguese people are very critical, very, very, very critical of Ronaldo. We're not the type of people that, you know, are always, oh, Ronaldo's great and he's the best and he's no. You know, there was many years when after disappointing World Cups, disappointing Euro performances, you know, he's the first one that gets the big X over his head. A lot of people saying, oh, he only cares about his club. He never performs when it's for the national team. And I think the Euro 2016 win kind of ended that conversation. And I think almost everything that you're describing that would happen to a player once they won a World Cup kind of happens for him once he won the Euro. You know, it was the first big, the first national trophy that he won with his country, something that Messi hasn't done. So I think that that conversation kind of happened when the Euro happened. And would I put him amongst the best ever? Yes, I would. So I think in terms of the Portuguese community, he's kind of already accomplished that. He was the guy who led our team to the Euro, something that Figo couldn't do, something that Eusebio didn't do, didn't take us to a World Cup final, didn't win the World Cup. You know, he's already kind of cemented himself as number one in Portuguese history because of what he accomplished at the Euro. And I think, honestly, a World Cup win would just be the cherry on top. Amongst Portuguese people, I think, just what I said, he's already at the top. I think a World Cup win would solidify him in terms of the global game and maybe in the argument of Messi versus Ronaldo that everyone loves. It would have to put him on top because it is something that Messi hasn't accomplished that he has, you know? So if you're really going to take the argument head-to-head and take it trophy by trophy, it would put him on top, and it would have to. Because that's literally the only fair thing. There's I mean, what are people going to say if he takes Portugal to a World Cup victory? There's nothing else left to say. But I think he's already accomplished a lot. I think he's obviously not satisfied because anyone who knows Ronaldo or knows about him knows that he's not going to be satisfied until, you know, he wouldn't be ultimately satisfied until he has a World Cup win also. But I think that Euro did something else to his career, and it gave him this kind of satisfaction that he'll be fine with if he isn't able to win a World Cup, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I understand. I definitely understand. Now, Joe, obviously, you know, we know what Cristiano Ronaldo is like as a player, as a person, and everything like that. But and this season, he hasn't been in the best starts in this Real Madrid side. Obviously, in La Liga and the Champions League, he's done pretty well. But, you know, there's been criticism about him. And maybe that fear for Portugal heading into just 6 months before a World Cup. I mean, how do you view Cristiano Ronaldo's form? And do you feel that this will probably affect the Portuguese national team's performance in this World Cup?
Well, I think with any great athletes, especially an athlete of his caliber, we're going to see his form improve. I know he got off to a slow start with Real Madrid this particular season. I think you're going to see his form improve. And the question is that can he remain healthy long enough to really get into that top gear that he's in, that we've seen him play at so many times, whether it be in the in the Champions League or in La Liga. You know, can he work his way up to that point? Because obviously at 32 years old, it takes us a little longer to get there. So I think we'll see the top Cristiano Ronaldo, provided he avoids injury, which is the caveat for every player on the planet. But I think as long as he avoids injury and he continues on his upward swing that we're seeing at Real Madrid, I think we shouldn't have any problem with seeing a top-line Cristiano Ronaldo leading this line for Portugal. So, Gabby, I want to close it out to you with one last question. I'd like to know, obviously, on the heels of a European championship, this is one of only two continental champions in this World Cup along with Australia. The other ones were all eliminated. What would a World Cup on top of the European Championship mean to the people of Portugal?
Oh, man. I think everything that we felt during our Euro win, you know, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, proving that a little country like Portugal can do it, that we can stand, you know, right next to the heavyweights in the football world and beat them. I think everything that we felt in that moment would just be amplified times 1,000. I think it would be utter like disbelief in the country of Portugal, in the streets of Portugal. It would just be an absolute party if we were able to accomplish that. And I think Portuguese people can kind of be a little bit pessimistic at times. We're really hard. Just like I said, we're really hard on Ronaldo. We're really hard on players. You know, just me speaking personally, my dad, my grandfather, you know, always something negative to say. Never really believed that we could. They hoped and they prayed that we could do it. But when push came to shove, they just always believed that something would go wrong. And I think the feeling now after accomplishing what we did in the Euro, I think there's never been more belief in a team that we can do this again on a bigger stage and prove yet again that we can win a World Cup than this very moment. So I think if in Portuguese history, if it was to happen at any given moment, now is the moment. And I think that's pretty much the sentiment across Portugal and Portuguese people everywhere. And, you know, we believe that we can do it, and I think we can do it, and I think we're going to do it. And you heard it here first.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopes and dreams are one thing, but expectations are another. So my final question to you for the night is, what is a reasonable expectation for this Portuguese team in the 2018 World Cup? What's a reasonable result to look back on this World Cup and go, you know what, they performed well?
I think to be completely realistic, and I'm going to be very harsh, I said we would finish second coming out of the group. I think that's a realistic thing. But I think finishing, not making it to this final would be a disappointment. To me, it would be a disappointment, because I just don't think that we have not had the talent since 2002 that you mentioned. Then, you know, after the 2004 Euro loss, that same level of talent, I haven't seen it since then, and I think now is the time to do it. And this may be, you know, he keeps saying he's going to make it to 2022, and that's going to be the last one. But, you know, Ronaldo is running out of days, and if he's going to do it, he's going to do it now. And I think anything short of making it to the final would be a disappointment for me. And you know, I think that my views are the same as many Portuguese and immigrants and Portuguese people in Portugal. Absolutely. Anything short of making it, if we make it to the final and we lose in the final, devastating, but I think Portugal will be received back at home with open arms. I think anything short of that, and we'll look at it as we missed it, the boat again.
No doubt about it. So, Rob, Gabby, I want to thank you for joining us again. This was our Portugal preview for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening tonight, and good night.